Hello and welcome to this course on the missing step in the architect sales process. My name is Enoch Bartlett Sears and I'm the publisher of Business of Architecture. This course was originally recorded as part of the Business of Architecture Summit in 2014. This course is registered with AICES for continuing professional education. The credits you earn as an AIA member will be reported to AIACES on your behalf, and certificates of completion are available upon request. The missing step in the architect sales process. A marketer, sales trainer, and a former police hostage negotiation trainer, Richard Petrie is the world's leading architect marketing and sales coach. He's worked with dozens of architects in multiple nations around the world. He leads the training inside of the Architects Marketing Academy, a marketing and sales training course founded by Richard Petrie along with Eric Bobrow and Enoch Sears. Richard's training and strategies help architects win and keep more of the kind of projects they want to work on. As a side note, he's also a former professional cricket player and holds a Guinness World Book record. In this course, you're going to learn how to fill in the missing step in your sales process to make it easier for you to win more projects and charge premium fees. This is Sales Training 101 for architects. You'll discover how to eliminate free appointments. You'll hear the exact script Richard recommends that you use to eliminate tire kickers and gently move a real prospect into a fee-paying client in one single discussion. You'll learn how to show your value in your initial meeting so that anything other than paying you your consultation fee would seem unreasonable, and you'll be able to control the whole sales process 100% up front by getting agreement on one key point. With that, I'll turn the time over to Richard Petrie, who is the presenter for this course.
Yeah, thank you. Nice to be here. And I have to start with the Guinness Book of Records. They've cut that book right back to only the interesting things. So my record is now, you won't see it there, but it was there a few years ago and it was for sort of runs off and over. Glad to be here and you're running a great event here. So, from what I've seen so far, it looks good. Okay, so what we're going to be doing today is Enoch's pretty familiar with this topic, and it's something that I started to see when I started working with architects a couple of years ago, that there was a general frustration with architects on the amount of, I think, free work they were doing, a general frustration of giving away some good ideas and projects not hiring architects, you know, after they'd given away good ideas, and a feeling that, and an overall feeling that architects had to give away ideas and time to get projects. There was a general, I know it's not universal, but there seems to be a general perception that a lot needs to be given away. So I sort of want to try and give you a sleepless night on that, if that's what you think, and give you some practical things that you can do to stop this disease of giving away too much. So what we're going to talk about is how to eliminate free appointments. It seems to be a hot topic. I launched a question on the Reba LinkedIn site a month ago, and my question was, how do people feel about doing free work or charging for their upfront consultation? And I think it was one of the most commented on posts, and it was really interesting to see the comments that were coming back, and I sort of cut and paste some of them onto this presentation, but there generally seemed to be a large proportion of people who were more than happy to do free work and thought that that's the way it was supposed to be. So this session is how to get paid for what you used to do for free. So I'd like to show you how to increase your conversion rate and reduce your risk of doing work for free, but also reduce the risk for the client, and that's part of the deal. It's sort of a win-win for you and for the client. And actually, I should start by saying a little story. And, you know, we've been training this for people within our Architects Marketing Academy, you know, around this whole concept of, look, let's get to being paid money quicker than maybe what you're used to or what the industry thinks is normal. And we had a lady on the Kathy, and I actually went to, she's based in Melbourne, and I went to Melbourne, and I had dinner with a couple of the architects who I'd never met, but they're on our coaching course. And over dinner, I could hear Kathy saying to the other lady, "Oh, I don't use the LCC, which is the thing we're going to do today. It doesn't work for me." And I heard it over dinner, and I tried to hold myself back from saying anything, going, "Look, it does work. It does work." But I didn't want to ruin the dinner I wouldn't have started an argument, but I thought I'd just let it ride. And I had to drop some things off her to her at her office the next day. And I popped in and said, "How are you going?" And I couldn't help but hear when you were talking about this LCC concept that you're saying it doesn't work for you. And I said, "Have you actually tried it?" And she said, "Oh, well, I haven't actually tried it, but I don't think it would work for my clients." And I said, "All right, well, can we just watch the video again? Can we go through the training, which is sort of what I'm giving you here today?" And we went through it, and we went through the script that I gave her, and she said, "Oh, well, okay, well, maybe it will work." This is after sort of 6 months of being on our coaching program. And she said, "Well, I've got a client this afternoon who I don't know if I want the job or not. I don't know if I want this, not the type of work I want." So I said, "Well, why don't you try out this approach this afternoon and see how you're on, seeing it doesn't matter whether you get the deal or not." And so she said, "All right." So she went out, and she'd normally gone out and had a few meetings for free, and she went out and she did meet with them, but she hit them with, "Here's how we're going to operate from here. If you want to go ahead, you have to start paying me money from this point on, and here's what you'll get, and here's why." And to her surprise and shock, they said yes. And she charged them a fee. It wasn't a huge fee, but she charged them a fee, and it was a bit of a breakthrough for her, because she was under the impression that people wouldn't be ready yet at this point to pay. And that's been my experience dealing with architects, is that the biggest issue a lot of you have, not all, but is that you think that people aren't prepared to pay in the early stages, when in actual fact, they actually are. So that's what we want to get into. And I want to show you how. So here's some of the problems that a lot of architects seem to have. And I'd be interested in, we've got a survey coming up soon, haven't we, Enoch? A couple of surveys coming soon.
Yeah, we do. Whenever you want to launch those, we can do that.
Okay, well, I'll just talk about this slide, and then we'll maybe talk about that. But just if you can tap into your chat box, do any of these issues, are they problems for you? A long sales cycle before you start earning money, or having to do lots of free work before you feel you're in a position to sort of say, "Right, we need to start charging now." Is that an issue for anyone? Do you find there's stalls and delays? Do you find your conversion rate is not as good as you would like it to be?
And maybe can you just define conversion rate for us, Richard? Maybe some people aren't quite sure what that means.
Yeah, it's getting someone from being an inquiry, from a free stage into a paid stage. Do you feel a little bit of uncertainty about how to do that? Do you feel a little awkward transitioning from we're chatting and sounding each other out to, "Right, now you need to start paying"? Do you feel uncomfortable, or do you feel you're not very good at that? And are you finding that you're doing sort of free work, maybe giving ideas, advice? Some people are even, doing a little bit of design, and the prospect's either never going ahead, or worse still, they are going ahead, and you can see they take some of your ideas, but they're going with someone else. Is anyone experiencing that? I can't see that.
Yes, we do. We have, I'll make you an organizer so you can see if you would like to, Richard, but I'll read out some of the excellent comments here. We got a lot of yeses. William says yes. Andy says yes. All the above. Greg says, all these issues are present to one extent or another on our projects. Charlotte, excellent comment. Free work, the market expectation is the free consultation, and if you don't provide ideas, et cetera, you won't win the job. David says, I don't have any of these problems, but I do have a problem getting enough dollars for the work. I'm probably converting well because I don't charge enough, but for my lower fee, I'm also not doing much up front either.
Right, okay.
Oh, and here's Kenneth. Kenneth says, a lot of architects experience this, but he says, most every of the site interviews I do, which are 1 to 2 hours, undoubtedly includes expected design solutions.
there's an expectation that he will give design solutions in the 1 to 2 hours for free. Is that
correct?
What you're saying?
Correct. I think that's what he means. Mm-hmm.
Right. Because I wonder, I challenge you guys on this, and it seems to me, having worked with quite a lot of architects, I mean, I get the benefit of sort of speaking to a lot of different architects and seeing what some people are doing, what others aren't doing. It seems to me the people earning money, and this has been a really interesting correlation for me, the people earning, and I know money's not everything, but let's talk about money. The ones earning more money seem to be charging right up front, like earlier than everybody else, and they never do design work until they get paid. They will never do design work because that's your IP, and once you've given that away, that seems to be, and I'm not an architect, but from what I've heard and what I've seen, it seems to be a big mistake to do design work. And here's the kicker, and that is that everybody says our market expects us to give away free ideas and free advice and maybe even free design. And I'm not sure I 100% believe that. I think that architects think that's what their market wants. I'm not 100% convinced that that's actually what the market expects. I think the market will expect what you tell them is the case. I think architects take a very weak, I'll be very blunt here, but I think architects as a profession around the world take a very weak position and are too easily, I wouldn't say pushed around, but they're too easily influenced, and they think that everybody wants everything for free before they're prepared to pay any money, and I don't believe that, because whenever I've had clients and I've said, right, start charging them money sort of very early on, they all seem to have good success at doing it. And I think the biggest issue, you know, with it is in your own head. And I know that's not going to be the case 100% of the time, and I know it's very easy to say, oh, yeah, but I'm different and my market's different. I'll say it's probably not. It's probably not. The problem is probably in your head. And you know, people will treat you how you have a perception in your head that you think, you know, it's more on how you think you should be acting than what actually the market's telling you.
Yep. Don here says, Richard, he says, we do this to ourselves. And Charlotte says, perhaps we've bought into the Mad Men model. Kenneth says, I don't want to provide solutions, but I won't get the job without spitballing creative input at the interview.
Well, yeah, and maybe, you know, I don't know your exact specific situation, but I can say in general, I think that's a myth. I don't, you know, I can't comment for you specifically, but I think in general that is definitely a myth, and I don't agree with it. An alternative to providing, you know, design ideas and specific things like that is providing education, and that's another method. So they can see how good you are through the fact that you know, if you're a thought leader. If you're a thought leader and provide content and ideas, generic ideas at a high level, they see how good you are and then they want you. But if it requires on you giving away your IP, it'd be like, I'm a marketing guy, right? It would be like me coming in to say work with you as an architect and me thinking that I have to give you a whole marketing plan before you'll hire me. And that would be crazy for me to do, because once you've got a marketing plan, you probably think you can do it yourself. Of course you can't. It's a bit like you giving a design away, thinking they can go away and build it. Of course they can't, but you're giving away all your IP. And if you think about the money you've made for people, or the money you've saved people, or the living spaces you've created through your IP and your specialist knowledge, you think about how valuable that is. No one else gives away the amount of IP that I think some architects feel they have to give. So, you know, you can agree with me or not agree with me, but I'm not changing my mind. I really think I'm right, and I think that you don't need to give away as much as you give. So
there's a very interesting comment here from Seth. I think this is worth reading out, and it might be premature to read this, but he says, for the last several years, I almost never interview people outside of a phone conversation without being paid for my time and expert information. And here's the interesting part. He says, my clients seem to see value in this too. I have been told that they feel more relaxed, that it's a consultation rather than a sales meeting.
Oh, isn't that, Seth, you are my man. Yeah. That's great, Seth. I think a lot of people can learn from this. I just hope to shake up some of your perceptions on some of this today. I mean, it's up to you whether you take it or not. it's not going to make much difference to me. But I really think that Seth is on the money. People value it more if they're paying. You know what? When people turn up to meetings and you're not charging them, I honestly think they feel a little bit uncomfortable because they don't know if you're charging or not sometimes. They don't know where they stand. They don't know when you're going to start asking for money. If someone like Seth says, look, I'll come for a site visit, it'll be $250 or $350, and you know what you're paying for, then they can relax. You know, they can relax. They know that they're paying. They don't feel indebted to you. There's not that uncomfortable feeling. Thank you very much for that comment, Seth, because I'm glad it's just not me and Enoch against the marketing world. I will say, you know, I do know that having put this out before, the people, you know, the bigger companies have no problem with charging earlier. That's my perception from what I can see. And the people making more money seem to have no problem. And, it, you know, honestly, even when people are very skeptical and reluctant, like Kathy in Melbourne, she goes out and tries it the first time. They go, fine, no problem. We're happy to pay for that. Oh, the kicker to that story was, sorry, they said, we're interviewing three architects. We're interviewing three architects. And she was the first one they interviewed. And she said, okay, well, they said, well, we're going to see two other than us. She went through and said, right, if you want to see me again, it's going to cost you money. They hired her. They hired her without even seeing the other two architects when she'd gone in and say, right, Nick, you know, time to start parting out with your money. So in summary, I think the biggest problem as a general rule is it more in your head that you've been brainwashed by either your architect institutes or, I don't know, whoever teaches you, or you've been brainwashed by some of your contractors into believing this, or you've been brainwashed by yourself, I'm not sure, but other professions don't do it. And so therefore, when people come to you, I don't think they necessarily expect free as much as you expect free because they're used to paying everywhere else. So it's just I think it's an industry thing, and the perception is if everyone else is doing it, therefore I have to do it, and I don't think that's true. So I'm going to move on. That's my rant. That's my rant for you. Sorry about that, everybody. Right. But I think it's a really important point because I think it can change a lot of things for you. So as I said, I'll just go through some of the comments here. Should architects charge a fee for their initial meetings? And some of the comments were, I feel all architects get carried away in the first meeting. When the client's ideas and brief plays a huge role, we tend to talk more and end up giving out our ideas, which generally is too late to turn back. Yeah, once it's out, it's out. There are always pluses and minuses like this, but like doctors and lawyers, why can't we charge an upfront fee for our appointment and discuss the way forward with costs? Well, I think you can. And another comment, where was another comment here? A lady saying, I think the first meeting should be free, but before going further with the job, an agreement about fees should be signed. I wasted lots of time with clients who are going around to different architects to get ideas and free consulting. Yep. And there's only one reason that this can happen, and that's because architects are allowing this to happen. So, you know, it's a good way to qualify people too, that if, you know, if they don't want to pay to meet you, and I'm not, you know, maybe you want to do a free meeting up front, but I'll tell you later on how to do that so that's less inconvenience for you. You know, giving away too much free ideas seems to be a rife. Here's Dawn here saying, I find I'm giving advice on process and feasibility of the customer's wants rather than design. Okay, well, that sounds, you know, sort of sounds reasonable. But Glenn Smith says, traveling 20 or so miles through Birmingham traffic to get a negative vibe can't be much fun. So he's exactly, I think he's right as well. And then someone else said, here's a guy, and this is what I'm saying about the bigger, more successful architects seem to charge quicker. Never, never, never repeat in a northern accent. No charge equals no respect. And this goes down with what Seth was saying before. You know, no charge equals no respect. So, and I know, you know, and so what is the fear? The fear is, well, if I say there's a fee to an initial consultation, then no one will even want to see me, and I'll end up with all these people rejecting me, and I'll have no money, and I'll go out of business. And I know that's what the people are thinking, but it doesn't seem to be the case for those who actually try it. So, So the cause of doing a lot of this, you know, if you find you are, you know, people do reject you for charging a fee, I think, you know, the problems are lack of your proper qualification of them in the first place. And when I say qualification, I probably should explain that. I know that'll be Enoch's next question. So qualification is, are they a genuine prospect? You know, do they have a project coming up? Do they actually have suitable amount of money for that project? Are they the person that makes the decision? And are the timeframes appropriate for you to go invest time, effort, and not necessarily money, but time and effort into developing the relationship? So if you're not qualifying people properly on that initial phone call, let's say it's a phone call that comes in, then of course you can drive around wasting a whole lot of time and effort. And I think that's the major reason people do waste time, is they actually end up going to meet with people they shouldn't be meeting in the first place. And another reason that people don't, you know, clients don't move ahead is their fear of commitment. They're a bit scared. So, Enoch, can we, before we imagine anything, but can we do those couple of little surveys?
It's going to cost you, Richard. It's going to cost you, but I think we can.
All right. Well, take it out of my speaking fee.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Let's see. So I'm going to run a poll here, and it's going to be open for a certain amount of time. On the right-hand side, you'll see some multiple choice options, and the question is, do you charge for initial consultations? Now, when you say initial consultations, Richard, can you define that a little bit better? This is a consultation where actually something, I mean, you want to define that for us?
Well, do you give away free, do you drive across town? Yeah, free. Do you do free meetings?
Yep. Okay. So I'm going to launch that poll. Yep. And go ahead and select one. We'll get our
response. Be honest here.
Yep. Let's try to get as many votes as we can here so we can get a good feedback for what everyone here on the call is experiencing in their local market right here.
And good to see Patricio here. Hey, yep. Patricio, yep. I saw your name. Same on the.
Yep. So there we go. I'm going to go ahead and close up the poll now. And we have, Richard, we have 71% are not charging for initial consultations, and about 30% are.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
So,
yeah, great.
And we have our next question. It's a little bit more complex, but the question here is, how long does it take generally to turn a lead into a signed contract? So when you get a project inquiry, you hear that someone's looking for a project, you get that phone call. How long does it generally take to turn that into a signed contract? And it's either 1 month, 2 months, 3 to 6 months, or longer than 6 months. So we'll see what we get back here.
Isn't this technology amazing where we can just do this?
We think so. No, I love it. Michelle is asking, I want to distinguish between a consultation and an interview. Richard, what's the difference there?
Don't know.
Yeah, I think they could probably be about the same. If you're spending lots of time in an interview, I would personally think that's a consultation. How about you, Richard? It depends. It's up to you.
Yeah, it depends on how you define it. Okay. What's an interview? I mean, it's a consult. You know, if you're meeting with them.
So we have 44% are saying 1 month, which is actually pretty good.
Okay.
32% are saying 2 months, 20% are saying 3 to 6 months, and very few, only 4%, are longer than 6 months. And that may be even due to the kind of project types that they're working on. But I'll go ahead and close up this poll here.
Okay. So, yeah, so it'd be interesting for the 30% who do charge for their, you know, early consultations. For the benefit of the 70, what comments do you have? What thoughts or advice do you have for the 70 who are doing free consultations? Can they just type any comments in there?
Yep.
You know, is it good? Do you find you lose deals? Do you find you get more respect? Do you find you win more deals?
So could you just repeat the question, Richard?
Well, the question is for the 30% who say that they charge for, you know, initial consultations, they charge right up front. What benefits do those people get? Is it good? Do you recommend other people do it? What should why should they do it if you think they should do it? Or do you find that it, any comments you have, just to add to the conversation.
Yep.
For those who do charge a fee early on, right up front.
All right. So you can see the questions there in the comments, Richard. So feel free to.
Okay.
Seth is saying he has a high close rate, about 7 or 8 out of 10.
Interesting.
And of course, Seth is the one who's charging. Carrie says, I've learned from Richard since you had him on last year. I've started charging for anything beyond a meet and greet to see if I'm a fit for the project. Yep. And I don't give away design ideas until I'm hired.
Great.
Yep. David clarifies, an interview would be they ask you about yourself. Michelle says, in an interview, they come to me and have a short period to discuss whether we're a good fit for each other or not. In a consultation, I charge and give them information, suggestions, ideas.
Okay. So free consultation for coming to the office, charge for site visits. Yeah, that's one way of doing it. That if you are going to give away free, and I'm not completely against doing a free initial, if you want to call it an interview, but I think they should come to you. I would be dead against you driving to their site to look at their site, because as soon as you get to their site, you sort of feel duty bound to make some comments. So plus you're driving, you're petrol, and they're under no commitment to, there's no commitment from them to do anything. I don't think there's anything wrong if you said, hey, I'm happy to have a meeting with you, chat to see if we're a good fit for each other, and just have an initial 30-minute, over a cup of tea at my office. I would definitely have them come to you. So good point from whoever said that, and that's the way I would do it. If I was incredibly scared about charging, I would, my first step would be have them come to me for free. Free phone consultation. Yeah, that's good. Free phone consultation. That's fine. So Sean says, I've lost some projects that I think were from people who would have, and I'm going to assume, I can't see the rest of it, who would have been problem clients. Yep, most don't blink or even expect it. For those who engage me for a large project, I roll it into my contract fee. Okay. Yep, exactly. They need to see my excitement and a teaser, but never a design. I always get that time back in the fee. Usually I get an interview, I get the job. That's from Rick Bynum. Yeah. And if you convert all of them when you do a free, I feel less pressure when I charge, as I don't really care that much if they hire me or not, but I generally do. But they generally do, because they're getting good information in a much more relaxed setting, generally at their project site. Okay. How do you effectively fend off giving design advice during what's supposed to be a meet and greet? How do you defend it off, Josh? Yeah, well, you just don't give it. You just grow a set, and you just you don't do it. You don't do it. You just say, hey, I'll tell you how. You tell them if you book a meeting, you tell them what the meeting's about and you tell them what it's not about. So you make it very clear that this meeting is not about, giving you advice about your project or design. It's just about finding out what your project is, understanding if I'm a good fit for it and if we are going to get on well and if we could work together. And you just, so you set the expectations before the meeting. You may do it verbally, and you may do it in an email or however it is you want to do it. We use a video. We've created a video that we send to clients. When I say we, my clients, they send this video to clients before they meet. So the expectations are spelt out, what the meeting's about and what it's not about. It's very clear. But you could say it. I charge for the initial unless the client asks for a meet and greet. Fair enough. If it's just a meet and greet, yep. If we do a free, it's usually as much about my approach and principles as it is about the client's evaluation and vetting. Okay, that's fine. And Juan To Lin said, some of us have home offices always used to driving. Sure. So you may not want to get them to, what he's saying maybe is I don't want people coming to my house. And then David Sisson says, do you suggest charging for initial meeting, but then telling them you'll knock them the same amount off the contract when they sign it? Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I don't think you actually need to do that either. I think you charge for that initial meet. Yeah, if you're going to charge, if it's just a meet and greet and that's what you want to do, I've got no objection to that, but don't give away any advice, don't give away any design, and make sure they come to you or to a hotel near you. You can meet them in a hotel foyer and meet and greet if you want, but it's got to suit you. You don't want to be stuck in traffic driving around town, burning up your petrol to meet with someone who maybe is never going to just fishing for ideas. Okay, I'm going to get off that. Okay, so let's have a look at this, and let's have a look at one of the reasons that stops either you or stops them paying money. So I want you to imagine a ladder with the first three rungs missing. Imagine that, and we've probably got a picture of that in a minute. Or imagine someone coming up to a marriage proposal on the first date. Imagine you go out for a blind date, and someone turns up. The woman or the man turns up and they pop the question to you in the restaurant. They're down on one knee. The whole restaurant turns around to look at you and they say, how about we get married? Seems a little premature. Or a set of stairs with the first three steps missing, because this whole thing is about the missing steps. So what I'm talking about is the sales process, and I believe a lot of you have steps missing in your sales process. And in fact, most of you don't have a sales process. That's part of the problem as well. So one of the reasons the prospects don't jump into signing concept drawings and big things like that is they have a fear of making a mistake. They have an uncertainty about the process that they're going through. They have a feeling about not being in control, and they have an uncertainty about the feasibility of their project, obviously. They're not always sure that it's something that can be pulled off. Okay, so they generally have a fear of making a mistake. And as Gary Holbert, who was a great marketer who I sort of followed and learned from, said, an uncertain prospect never buys. So let's look at this in detail. So if there is uncertainty, and the concept, you know, I'm talking about the concept drawings here, to move someone into concept drawings is for a lot of prospects, possibly particularly residential, because they don't do this every day, so they're a bit nervous about it, and even commercial, because they know there's lots of things that can go wrong, and they're spending the company money, and therefore their job's on the line. People are a little bit nervous about pressing the button, and effectively, because think about it, you know, doing concept drawings, it's almost the same as getting engaged, isn't it? You are going to be with that accountant for a long time. It's a big commitment. It's hard to pull out. It's hardish to pull out after that, even though you can pull out of an engagement, but there is a bit of grief, and you get the in-laws giving you the dirty eye, and people saying you're mean, and you know, all this type of stuff. So it's a lot easier. Let's reduce the risk. So the solution here, as it says on the screen, is can we offer smaller steps? Do we have to jump people all the way up to concept drawings? Well, and the second part of the solution is educate people. So I said earlier that one of the reasons people maybe don't jump into concept drawings is because they don't really know. They don't know the variables before they proceed, and part of the solution is to outline the process. I don't think this gets done very well by architects. They don't educate people as to here are the steps, here's the big picture, here's the steps you need to move through to make their prospect feel more at ease. So those are two solutions I'm going to recommend. Less is more, but not free. I don't think you want to be doing free. So, my suggestion is, and it seems to work pretty well, is create a smaller steps. You know how I said, you know, a lot of people are jumping people up to the third rung on the ladder or a set of stairs with steps missing. I'm going to suggest we look to create some smaller steps that you can get paid for. Okay, so a set of stairs with three steps missing. Can we put in a couple of steps in the front there to make it easier? How do we do that? Well, this concept that we've been doing is a thing called an LCC, or a low commitment consultation. So I want to take you through it, explain how to create one, and show you how it works. What we're trying to do here is lower the risk for you and create a proven process for them. Okay, so what we want to do is create some sort of commodity item that offers a guaranteed outcome. It's reasonably standardized and it's off the shelf. And that's what we'd call you know, in marketing, I call that sort of productization. So what you do is a very tailored service once you get into the design and all that. But before you get into the design, let's create a little product, a productized service. So here's how to turn a service into a product. This was a bit of a breakthrough for me a few years ago. First thing, if we're going to turn a service into a product, and when I talk about service, I'm talking about some initial thing, you know, one of those initial steps before they get to a big step like the concept drawing. So any product needs a name. It needs to have a name, okay? Not free meeting. That's not a name. It needs a name. What's an example of something which has a name? A product, business class, okay? That you're flying business class. That is a product. The business class is a product. Economy is a product. And first class, they're three different products, and they've all got different names. Number two, there is a promise, a guaranteed outcome. Here is what you'll get when you buy this product. So if you're buying first class, there is a promise that you're going to get better food, better service. It's going to be more comfortable, and you're going to get more status as well. You'll get different tags. Your bag will come off the runway, you know, come off the conveyor belt faster. And three, there's a standardized process. There's certain things, there are systems in place. It happens the same way every single time. And four, there is a price. Okay, so there's a name, there's a promise of delivery, there's a certain process that's standardized, and there's a price. Okay, so for example, business class, I've beat myself. Business called business class, higher promise, the process is different, it's better, better food, better seats, better check-in, better service, and the price is often two times what you would pay for coach or economy, depending on what part of the world you live in. Now, why can't we create effectively a product for architects? So let's have a look at some other examples of people who have created a product. A doctor will often offer a product called a full medical. It's got a name. It's got a promise that will identify all the gaps in your health. It's got a price. Car mechanic might offer a 32-point inspection. Accountant might offer an audit. A computer. Now, this is interesting because I really want to talk about this computer guy. If I take my laptop, and we're talking about this free business, if I take my laptop to be repaired in a repair shop, my computer guy, and in fact, all of them in where I live, they will all charge me a fee just to look at my computer to see if they can fix it or not, right? So the initial fee is $90 or $120, depending on who you go to, and that is just to have a look at it, and they will then tell you whether they can fix it or not and how much the fix will be, okay? Computer repair guy. Now, if a computer, you know, if a doctor can do it, we know that. We know a lawyer can do it. We know a car mechanic won't have a free consultation, will he? We know your accountant won't have a free consultation. Not even your computer repair guy won't say, I'll have a look at it and tell you if I can fix it or not. No, he says, I'll have a look at it, and for $90, I'll tell you if I can fix it or not, you know. So why can't an architect, and 70% of you can, but another 30% don't. So just one more thing, you know, for the 70% of you who may be a bit skeptical, here's another lady, Gayla, who tried this. Toastmasters group today, and I got a call from someone in my group who'd known me for 2 years, and I've been thinking about a project for 10 years. I used your script you sent this week. I used a script you sent this week. Well done, Gayla. Oh, and yeah, yes, I combined it. Yeah, and she got a deal that from a guy who was in her Toastmasters when she – sorry. Let me explain it. She read the script that I sort of gave her in as a Toastmasters speech just to a group to practice speaking, right? And there happened to be a guy in the room who was in her Toastmasters group as well, just listening. And by the time we'd listened to her speech about her her offer for a low-cost consultation, he ended up saying, yes, I'll hire you for that low-cost consultation. So it was kind of funny. So another example of a creating one of these low-cost consultations, this is where the idea originally came from. I used to work for an IT company, and the traditional way for selling IT was someone rings up and says, we need this work done. You go in as a sales team and you do all this diagnosis so that you can put together a proposal and a quote. This takes an incredibly long amount of time, and then sometimes you win them and sometimes you don't. Well, we decided, no, we're not going to do that. We're sick of doing all this free work, this free analysis, and so that we can provide a quote. What we'll offer is this thing called a functional analysis. So what we'll do is we said to them, we can either do a quote for you, or we can conduct a feasibility analysis. Our feasibility analysis process allows us to fully understand your requirements and assess what will be required. And then what we say is we'll produce a document which outlines what's required, and you can give that to us, or you can give it to any other supplier, and you can go to tender and you can get quotes from them, and everyone's quoting off, you know, the same thing. Now, the funny thing we found was, and actually there's a funny thing about the functional analysis, the functional analysis is exactly what we had to do anyway to provide a quote. How can you give a quote unless you've done a functional analysis anyway? So we gave it a name. We gave it a process. We said what you'll get from it. We gave it a price. There was a, you know, promise, and we put a price on it. And what we found was more people were interested in paying us to do the functional analysis than get us to do the quote. We thought, this is kind of interesting. And, of course, once we did the functional analysis, this analysis and design, then they almost always hired us anyway. In fact, they always hired us. So that was kind of interesting. So we converted from what we used to do for free into a paid thing. So here's what we said. This is the process. At the end, you'll be able to do this, which you'll be able to take the quote to anyone in town, and they'll be able to quote you accurately once you've done our functional analysis. So here's a way of possibly doing that for you. A rough script here. Rather than go straight to concept drawings, my suggestion is we conduct a, give it a name, a needs and options review is something I've been using with a lot of people recently. This is your version of a functional analysis. The benefit, tell them what the benefit is. The benefit of this needs and options review is that it reduces the unknown factors before we start spending serious money. Here's what the process entails. I will do this, I will do that, I will do this, and I'll do that. Now, I wouldn't give too much in here. You don't need to do too much. At the end of the process, what you'll have is you'll have this document, which will allow me or any other architect the ability to give you an accurate price for the design phase. Okay, so you can move ahead with confidence. The cost of this is only this when compared with this much for a full concept drawings. And if you do the concept drawings with me, I'll rebate the fee of the concept drawing price. That's optional. Okay, so this is one way of doing it. I'm not saying it's the only way of doing it, but this is a way of doing it. Here is an example of how someone's drawn it up. This is Rachel Burton. So she's productized it onto one page. She's given a name. In her case, it's the discovery consultation meeting. The promise, she's bullet pointed, here's all the things you will get if you have this meeting with me. The price is here, $750, enter your credit card details here, and she outlines the process over here. So she's got all four of those steps I said for productizing a meeting. I'm conscious of the fact I'm just sitting here talking to myself for long periods of time, maybe boring people to death, but hopefully... is this useful for people? Do people see at least a way of how this could be applied for them? Or even if they are charging for a meeting, maybe hopefully you're seeing a way that maybe you can charge a bit more or be more consistent with your how you do it. It's a bit more formulaic in how you do it. Is there any comments?
I think just people are enjoying it. Absolutely. William says, yes, it's very useful! Exclamation point. Grammy says, it's all good, Richard. This is great. Yes, great advice. Thanks, Patrick and Gary. Allison, super useful. Love the idea in the direct language. Yes, can see that this would get rid of some tire kickers, says Charlotte. That tire spelled with a Y as opposed to a, because she's from the UK.
Good on her. Yep. Well, we spell UK as well. Yeah, and look, will it work in every single situation? No, it won't. It won't work with tire kickers spelled with a Y or an I. It won't. They won't want to pay your $750 to get some, you know, preliminary advice from you. You know, if design starts later, this is sort of risk-reducing advice. So no, tire kickers won't want to, and some other people may not want it. You may lose the odd deal because of it, but I think the overall benefits are that you'll be better off, in my humble opinion. And I'm not that humble, to be honest. So in my opinion, I should just say. Right. So, you know, this is how you do it. So let's see what's coming. Right. Now, you know, in terms of justifying running a little bit of analysis or a little bit of research for them before they jump into design phase, here's why. And would all architects be, I mean, I was never familiar with this, but this is something Mark Siddle gave us. Are you guys familiar with this? I'm not sure what it's called, but I'm not sure whether all architects know this picture or not. But what it is the opportunity, the purple line over here is the opportunity for change. And this is what you explain to clients. Here's, you have lots of opportunities for change early on in a project in the discovery phase. Then we go into design, then build. So the opportunity for change is very high early on because we're just changing lines on a piece of paper. As we get into design, it gets more and more expensive. And if you want to make changes when we get to build, it becomes almost, well, not impossible, but very, very hard and very, very expensive because the cost goes up. You can see the cost. It's very easy and cheap to make changes early. I just move, you know, like lines on a piece of paper. Later on, it gets exponentially more expensive. And if you're going to make changes in the build phase, it's incredibly expensive. So the point of this is the more research, analysis, and design that happens in the early phases, the cheaper it is, and you end up with a better design. And when people get shown this type of chart and explained it, they go, oh, I see. So what you're saying is we should spend a little bit more time on the planning and the research because we can't do it later. And particularly if you say, look, no matter what happens, almost every, you know, there'll be a point in the project when you're going to want to make changes to the design, changes to what you want. Almost every no project starts out and ends up being the way it was intended right from the first go. That's why it's important for us to do more work up front, looking at all the options and really evaluating your needs really clearly. Spend a little bit of extra time doing that here while the cost is way down here. Right, we will save you a fortune by spending a little bit of money up here to get the very best design. If we end up doing it later on, you can see the cost going up exponentially. So my suggestion is, and you can even say this is where most architects get it wrong. They're so keen to get a client and get you on board that, you know, you move straight to the design phase too early without reviewing all your options, and it becomes, you know, making changes becomes more and more expensive. I'm going to suggest to you, Mr. Client and Mrs. Client, that we spend a little bit of money here and flesh everything out so that when we get to the design phase, we know we've got the best options available on the table. Because at the moment, to be honest, we don't, and no architect does, just looking at that piece of land or looking at that, you know, what you're planning, we don't know. We're going to work this out as we go over here if we go straight through to concept drawing. So that's how you justify it, those type of words. And like I say, once you come up with some good words, I would put them onto it. What you can do, an option, is you put it onto a video and you explain the value of your, let's call it a discovery session or needs and options review. You put those onto a little video or you write it down, so that you've captured it in the most articulate, most compelling way that you possibly can, like a lawyer building a case, and then you give it to them, you know, in an email, or you send it as part of a letter or a document, or you read it onto a video, and you send them a link to the video where it explains all this. I would love, actually, Enoch, you know the video that we scripted and wrote?
You there, Enoch? Another one. Yep.
Would in a minute would we be able to play that for people? Because I think it's.
Yep, we can give it a try. We have about a little bit 15 minutes left of presentation time, so we could work that in. It might be difficult over streaming, but we'll see how it turns out. You want me? I can pull that up.
If you could pull it up, because I think it would show people the words and how you know. how it's not. Yeah, I think it'd be useful for people. Anyway, so low commitment consultation. I'll move through here. Here are some words you can use to describe it. You could call it a needs and options review. That's what I like people calling it. But we've talked about an OPAP, a one-page action plan. So some people have sold a, you know, for $250, you can meet with me. We'll review where you're at, and we'll give you a one-page action plan on what's required from here for you to be able to move forward with your project ideas. Site visit, that's a pretty simple name, isn't it? Feasibility study, discovery process. Up to you what you would call it, but it needs a name. Remember, it needs a name, needs a promise, needs a process that you can explain to them. Here's what happens, 1, 2, 3, and a price. Now, what the prospect sees, let's turn this into a picture, your visual people. So let's say a phone call comes in. This is what it seems like before to a prospect. I make an inquiry. Maybe I meet and greet you for free. And then, whoa, concept drawings. How much for concept drawings? Whoa, that's a big step. Okay. Can we think about it? This is from the prospect's point of view. So what the prospect might see after, this is how you might construct it, is, okay, inquiry, okay, I can come and meet and greet you at the office. The next step would be a site visit maybe, then a needs and options review, okay. Then we go into concept drawings, okay. All right, well, let's do the site visit, and then maybe let's do that, and then, you know, I now understand what's going on. I understand my options better. I think you understand me. You understand my options better. I feel less scared about now committing to, say, $10,000 worth of concept drawings. Can you see how, from a prospect's point of view, the steps aren't as big and as scary? We've broken them into smaller steps. I'm not saying this is the exact model you should follow, but you get the point. So you need to construct your own stairway. Okay, so the inquiry. Just going through this very quickly because I'd actually like you to see the video. I think you'd enjoy it, and it sort of sums up everything I'm putting on here. So just a chance to get rapport here. This phase is just about getting rapport. This phase is really about answering questions and selling them the next step. Site visit, something like this. It's up to you what you would have in the needs and options review or your version of it. It's up to you to define it. But I wouldn't have too much in there, but enough to allow them to reduce their risk because you've done extra analysis and research. And I'll tell you what, reducing their risk is like really valuable. For $1,500, you know, that exercise there can save them. You know, you ask yourself, can that save them tens of thousands of dollars later on if you've done a little bit of extra research up front? I'm going to say yes. So in summary, how to get paid for what you used to do free, increasing your conversion rate, reduce your risk. Oh, well, it doesn't quite conclude. Hi. Can we show building, the video, Enoch?
Are we set will, up we that will, we can do We'll that? Attempt it. I'm not sure this is going to work, but we'll give it a try here.
Well, I could play it on mine because I can find my version of it in a Kiwi accent if you... It's just an example of how I would justify that meeting. We probably need to use up the hour to officially justify the
let's see here.
Continuing education.
Let's see. Let me change presenter, and I'll be presenter, and I'm going to show my screen here. So first, just want to confirm that our participants can view my screen. If you're looking at something that says, if you are building or renovating, then take an action on what you will learn. And okay, people see it. Now the trick is, can we get the audio through? I'm going to try something here. And if it echoes and acts weird, let me know.
Or renovating, then taking action on what you learn in this short training video will be the most valuable thing you do for years. Now, I know this is a big statement, but I can say that because it will help you avoid the number one.
Okay, I just want to pause and make sure. Was that a confirmation? You can hear it and see it?
I personally can't see it. I can still see my screen.
Yeah, right. How about the reviewers? Can the reviewer, can our participants? Okay, they say yes and yes, so I'll continue.
Okay, great. Well,
if you're building or renovating, then taking action on what you learn in this short training video will be the most valuable thing you do for years. Now, I know this is a big statement, but I can say that because it will help you avoid the number one most costly mistake people make when doing a building project. Have you ever heard the term on time and on budget? If not, this concept is an important one. On time and on budget is a term used in all big projects from construction to IT, to building roads, all projects are trying to meet their targets. The term on time and on budget refers to completing a project within the planned time frame and within the planned budget. Many times, however, this doesn't happen, and for your project, this is bad news. There are many reasons projects might not come in on time and on budget, but by far the number one reason is lack of planning in the early phases. So here's the thing. At some point during your project, you're going to discover a way to make your project better. Now, this is a given. It always happens. It could be a design change. It could be a window or a door in a better place. It could be the layout of a room. It might be a design that saves you money or dramatically improves the livability of the spaces. But sooner or later, you're going to want to make a change. And when shortcuts are taken early on and people rush into the design phase, then they do not discover all the options they had or what they really wanted until the concrete has already been poured. Without getting a full needs and options review conducted before the builder gets on site, homeowners regularly shortchange their design. Late discovery of your real needs or options leaves you crying, "If only I had known." Now, this is why we created the needs and options review. There are 5 points during the process of a project where you have the opportunity to make changes. The first one is the needs and options review. Second one is the concept design. Third, the building documentation. After that, bidding and negotiation and the construction phase. Now, if you discover better options early on, then you can make the changes effortlessly. Make your discoveries late and you pay exponentially more, or worse, live in a house where you settled for a lesser option. This little chart here gives an indication of how cost increases over time. As you can see at the beginning, during the needs and options review phase, costs are very inexpensive, but as we get further on in the project, all the way down to the construction phase, changes can cost up to 50 times more, and that's not even counting the time that it takes and project delays. You know what they say? A picture is worth 1,000 words. With a needs and options review, you will never have to utter those tragic words, "If only I had known." So take a look at this chart. Time is on the bottom on the x-axis. Now, as time progresses from left to right, the opportunity to make changes decreases. That's what this line is showing here. So this is common sense. It's a lot easier to change the location of a concrete footing before it has been placed in the ground. Now, let's look for a second at the relative cost to make a change. As you can see, on the left-hand side, we have a low cost, and at the top of the graph, we're going to have a high cost. So as time progresses, the cost gets more expensive. The best time to make a change is at the beginning of a project. This is why a thorough needs and options review should be your first step. Or as Abraham Lincoln said, "If I had 9 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first 6 sharpening my axe." Old Abe Lincoln understood that proper preparation early on can save a lot of time and effort in the long run. Or if we put that into common terms, measure twice and cut once. Now, when we overlay these two charts, you'll see at the beginning of a project, the opportunity for change is at its greatest. And at the end of the project, the cost to make changes is at its greatest. It's at this point in the process that we want to avoid making changes. We want to make changes over on the left-hand side and thoroughly explore all of your options. This is why a proper needs and options review saves you time and money. So you may be asking, do I need a needs and options review? Well, here's a quick test to find out. To grab a pen and paper and give yourself a score for each of the following questions. I'll wait. First question, how clear are you on exactly what you need on a scale of 0, not at all, to 10 completely? Question 2, out of 10, how clear are you on all the options your site will accommodate? Out of 10, how confident are you that you are aware of the legal requirements? Okay, out of 10, how aware of you are the process you will need to have in place to get the project completed on time and on budget? And a last question here, out of 10, how confident are you that your budget will achieve your needs? 0, not at all, to 10 completely. Okay, go ahead and tally up your score, and don't worry about not being able to answer all of these questions 10 out of 10 yet. The needs and options review will allow us to fill in the gaps and get you ready to move to the design phase. The first step you will need to complete is the needs and options review. Now, we designed this process a few years ago because we saw a huge issue in the construction industry of people starting design and construction before they had fully done their research and their homework. We would see many building projects going over time and over budget. The consequence of inadequate upfront research of needs and options is like building a house on bad foundations. The foundations are the most important part of the whole house because everything is built on top. It's very expensive to change the foundations once you have started to build on top of them. But, on the other hand, it's very easy to change them if they are simply lines on a plan. So this is what makes us different. We spend more time on the research than most other firms who rush their clients into the design phase. We take a different approach. In fact, we will only work with clients who are prepared to do the needs and options review properly. We will not rush this step. It only causes cost overruns later if we take shortcuts and don't establish solid foundations. The needs and options review is the most important step because it lays the foundation for a successful project. Once complete, the valuable insights you gain from this first phase can be used by us or any other architect and will ultimately produce a better result for you. Question: can I save money by not paying for a needs and options review? Sure, you could skip this step or meet with someone who gives you a few free ideas before rushing you into the design phase. But not investing the time into a full needs and options review can be the most expensive decision you make during your project. The most cost-effective time to discover all your options is now. Well, I just want to thank you for watching this brief training video. We look forward to working with you. To book your needs and options session, complete the form below. You'll see it right below this video. Someone will contact you shortly to schedule a suitable time. Once again, complete the form below now to book your needs and options review. Thank you.
Okay. So that's how we described it. That's how we justified having this this extra step. Oh, I'm hearing myself. It's bad sound here. So can we get some? Richard. Okay, thanks for that.
Yep.
Great. Nice vid. So I think we need to, if I just jump to the end of my slide and say we're officially ending the
Let me give you back
continuing education.
The presentation, so you're going to be showing your screen now. There you go.
Show my screen. There we go. Can people see that?
Not quite yet, but it takes a couple seconds to come through. Now we see it. And this does conclude the AIA Continuing Education Systems course. And now we're open for questions. And Richard, I'll turn it back over to you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Okay. So I'm really just interested in questions or comments from people.
There's
about
a great
that,
one,
but
great one from Greg here. He says, "How do you keep clients from trying to add scope to this initial feasibility process?"
Well, I'm not an architect, but I would say that what you do is you map out very clearly what is included in your feasibility, whatever you call it, and you tell people also in the document or the video or whatever it is, you tell them what's not included. People are very good at saying here's what you get, but they're not very good at saying here's what you don't get. So if you spell it out in detail, you can then go back to it. That's how I would do it. But the point of that video was to write a script that made doing that, you know, like I say, for example, Kathy in Melbourne the other day, she was up against three architects. She was the only one offering the small step, and they hired her. The others were offering free visits and free consultations and then straight through to concept drawing. So she differentiated herself in the fact that she had an intermediary step. There's a question here from Jess wondering what kind of costs and time is required to invest in the trademark for your productized name. Personally, I wouldn't bother myself. Just use it.
Yep.
Question
from Laura here. What size project do you think is appropriate for a needs and options review?
I think that's your call. You know, it's up to you. But, I mean, there's a key point with the needs. Let's say we're going to call them all needs and options review. The key point is it has to be something of value to them. So you think it's a value because you know it is, and they think it's a value because you've explained it clearly. In which case, if it is something of value and it does reduce the risk for them because you are looking at more needs than maybe you would have done in the past, then it, you know, in theory, it could be any size project. That's the way you should start by being paid to do a little bit more research and analysis than maybe you would have done in the past. So it's up to you. But any other questions, any other comments? I mean,
yeah, I look forward to some feedback. What do people think of this? You know, give Rich a little bit of feedback on his presentation here, and I'll be reading those out. Charlotte says, several clients we've had cannot visualize. So we think we've scoped out their needs, and then it's only on site that they start to get ideas for changes. Any suggestions for how to handle that?
Yeah, well, you know, that's exactly right. You guys are experts at visualizing and design, and the clients aren't. So that's why it helps them to pay for a little bit of initial consultation, do maybe not design, but do analysis and talk them through things. up front. So them changing their ideas, well, that's exactly what I said. I mean, and Enoch said in that people change their minds too late in the process and it becomes expensive. So I think the more they spend up front on the analysis, the better for them. Does this process lock you into a higher level of responsibility by guaranteeing a result? Depending on what result you're guaranteeing. So don't promise anything that you feel at risk with. You just, the result can be we can identify extra options and we can, you know, identify possible roadblocks and feasibility. Just promise what you feel comfortable promising, as long as it's of value to the client. Oh, they're coming through now, aren't they? Thanks, Richard. This is Seth. I've been working at this for a while, but it's great to hear what other people think. Jess says, it is a sweet spot for client relationship improvements. It is what I'm trying to do with La Carte Architect, but more a...
Yeah, what we talked about in the last session, Jess told us about his something he's trying to do, which is an a la carte architect, basically breaking out some more bite-sized chunks that allow him to engage clients that aren't maybe ready for a full project. But he was finding that that was very problematic, just the way that he had approached it and the way he was doing it.
Okay. One, I'm not sure how you say your name, but is it Juinto Lin? Great idea. I recently did this on a customer request. So the customer requested it. Wow, there you go. It says something. And it was absolutely essential as we learned about all the complications. If I had prepared fee proposal earlier, I would not have known what we were getting into. Right. Exactly. So, you know, the client understood the value and it saved themselves a lot of problems. Seth says, great to hear how others are handling it. Funnel, sorry. You don't know what the word funnel means? Is that what you're saying?
I think he's correcting his typo.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Renzo. Great as usual, Richard. Thank you. You need to add the step to my marketing. Yeah. It's your sales. It's part of your sales process, really, isn't it? It's have a sales process. So my suggestion is you map out what are the steps you want your prospects to go through. You know, what is, you know, like the steps. What are the steps that you are comfortable with? And tell them what it is up front, and then step them through it, and tell them why they do it. You do each step. There has to be a reason, and let them know because they don't know. So Renzo, good thoughts and processes likely eliminate the type of clients I don't want anyway. Exactly, it will get rid of you. Peter Tui, the PR expert. What is the actual deliverable of the needs and options? It looks like the programming phase with options. Oh, well, you're starting to get over my head now, Peter. Maybe Enoch can answer that. My simplistic answer as a marketer would be, you know, you deliver whatever you think is worth delivering in that phase. You don't deliver too much, but it's got to be something valuable.
Yeah. Maybe Peter's just referring to the fact that programming is when you basically determine, it's sort of a needs and options, but you determine the needs of the client. Say, for instance, if you're designing a hospital, you know, how many beds do they need in the hospital? Then you're going to figure out potential square footages. So it's just it's not even schematic design yet. It's just what are your needs and options. So it could be considered a programmatic element, I would think.
Yep. Okay. Charlotte says, I think the takeaway message is that, yeah, I like this bit too. The bit where he says, look, you know, this is how we work. If you don't want to do a needs and options review, basically, you know, said in the video, then, you know, you can't progress as a client because we insist on doing this. This is what makes us different. And we do it for a very good reason. We do it because it reduces your risk. If you're not prepared to do it, then we're not prepared to move ahead with you. So exactly right, Charlotte. A little bit of takeaway selling. Graham says, is it more effective to go over the process in person over the phone or written in an email? I think it's more effective if you do it multiple times in multiple media. So you do it over the phone, you do it in an email, and you might put it in writing as well. You need to, you know, you really do need to hit people over the head with a hammer with any key points because they're not going to remember them. I have a retail. This is Apana Petal, is it? Petal. I have a retail client who wants to discuss his retail space. Every time I go shopping in his space, yeah, I end up spending time on these mini meetings. Yeah, exactly. Any advice on how to add these mini meetings to my fees? Not really. You just, I would say, just off the top of my head, I would say, hey, this sounds like a great idea, but I don't have time right now. But would you? We can sit down. If you want to come to my office, we can sit down and discuss it. You know, get him to come to your office, and he's more likely to expect that there's going to be a fee for it. But I suspect he probably won't want to pay a fee. He sounds like the type of potential client who just wants you to chat about it. Josh says, awesome, the info and the cost time saving graph is crucial for managing expectations, yeah, and promotes the importance of early design discovery for clients. It definitely would create better client relationships as well. Yeah, I think so. And you know, a picture tells a thousand words, so it helps you justify, you know, that chart where the costs go up as the time goes on, helps you justify why spending a penny now will save you a pound later on. For those English people.
Yep, yep.
And then how do you say that, Enoch?
Nemica, I think. I'm not quite sure. But Nemica asks, what software do you use in the making of your needs and options review? Just curious, is it okay not to show your face? So just I can speak to that since I recorded the video. It's preferable to show your face, but I've done a lot of video. It's very hard to do a good take, to be quite honest. And yeah. This is just for expediency. It's a lot easier to read over a script while you record your screen or some text than do a live take, because you're going to feel more nervous. And so that's the only reason. If you feel comfortable and not camera shy, then, you know, definitely your face is always going to be better.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about reading a script. You know, you can't do that if you're just going to stand there in front of the camera. There's quite a lot of words there. So you can just read your script if they don't see your face. And we use, do you use ScreenFlow, Enoch, or?
I think I'm using Camtasia, which is a tool similar to ScreenFlow. ScreenFlow's for the Mac. Camtasia is for the PC. Camtasia's about $300 for that. It allows you to process video. I know ScreenFlow, I think, is $99 for the Mac. And another option for the PC would be Screencast-O-Matic, which is like $30 if you want to do some sort of screen capture of your screen. Gary makes a great point. He says, hey, just include a photograph of your face. And that's perfect, perfect. Yep, good idea.
Yep. And Gary says, I've been asking why architects aren't charging for consultations. So you've answered the question. Well, we need to be charging for our time, knowledge, and advice. And you guys have been studying for 8 years before you get to be let loose on the world. You know, same as doctors. And I wouldn't go to a doctor and say, can I pick your brains for half an hour? Oh, I'm offended that you want to charge me. You know, and a lot of the people you're dealing with are professionals, aren't they? Because they're the ones that hired architects, so they sort of get this. So, So yeah, and I honestly think the main reason people don't charge is they're scared. They're scared that means that people won't want to go forward, and I think it's more in your head than it is in the client's head. Yep. And as Seth said earlier, sometimes, you know, the clients feel better about it. And good luck with everybody with charging fees early on.
All right. Thank you, Richard, for joining us. We appreciate it.